was a rock fight as expected, JB, but Notre Dame is going to the national championship game against an opponent to be named later. Either a Big Ten or an SEC opponent, but it was Independence Day tonight. Notre Dame 27, Penn State 24, and that is one of the better college football games and more competitive college football games you will see from wire to wire.
Complete rock fight, dog fight, junkyard dog, whatever you want to call the first half. Second half, we saw both teams able to open it up a little bit more, but Notre Dame, despite having significantly more injury problems, nonetheless proved that it had better depth or at least more sheer will to find a way to get it done. And in a game full of big moments and big plays, gosh, you've got 8 to 10 guys that stand as Notre Dame heroes that, much like last week in New Orleans, have now stamped themselves into the Notre Dame record books and giving Notre Dame a chance to win its first national championship since 1988.
We don't always do this, JB, but with this much to discuss, I think we do almost a little bit of chronologically while we end up inevitably bouncing around, of course, for the most important moments. But I thought there was a moment where Notre Dame was able to, it looked like it was going to be one of those, hey, field position is going to be important. Notre Dame pins Penn State at the 2-yard line, but they're still able to drive out and reset field position. And shortly after that, we're going to talk about the pick, but shortly after that, Riley Leonard misses high and throws an interception that costs ND. You had a comment on that because of what Riley Leonard said in postgame about his interception there.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved what Riley Leonard said. And he said, I didn't execute on that. That's on me. I left it high. But if I didn't try that pass, I would have regretted it. I think, again, I said it in instant analysis. I'll say it now. That's why these dudes on this team love him, because he does give them chances to make plays. And it took him the guts and the amnesia to throw a back shoulder fade for Jaden Greathouse that proved to be a pivotal, pivotal first down conversion in this game, going towards the Penn State sideline, towards the far end of the field from the media press box. So I guess that would have been the northeast end of the field or something like that. So, I think that Riley Leonard always owns his mistakes, but he also plays quarterback a lot like Christian Gray plays cornerback, and he forgets the last play and expects to make the next play.
And that interception set up Penn State's first field goal. Almost a field goal that didn't happen, because you mentioned Christian Gray. We do agree that he held before the pass was thrown when he made a nice pick in the corner of the end zone. I thought that was going to see some serious momentum. But after that, Notre Dame, with two run stuffs, one by Kingston Billy Amuasa. I want to highlight that because he had a heck of a game coming back. Second game back from injury, much greater role that I did not expect in this contest. And then Nicholas Singleton drops a pass in the flat. It wasn't a great pass. Drew Aller hit him in the knee. But you expect Nicholas Singleton to make that catch and put them up 7-0. I thought it was pretty big that Notre Dame held to 3 right there. Obviously, as the game goes on, it became even bigger. But at the moment, it seemed to really stem the tide.
And that's a series that will be heavily debated and poured over, particularly from a Penn State perspective. A lot of people wondering if that wouldn't have been or shouldn't have been an opportunity for James Franklin and Andy Kotelnicki to put Tyler Warren in the wild line package or whatever and try to score and punch it in there on fourth and goal from the 2.5 or so. It ended up being officially a 20-yard field goal, so maybe they were closer to the 3 than the 2, but the way their defense was playing, you certainly could make the argument, make the case that Penn State could have set a tone right there, could have set a real message right there, and instead didn't. And then, as we'll get into it over the course of this show, Marcus Freeman did what Marcus Freeman has done all year. He stayed aggressive.
With Penn State's defense, I agree with you. I don't think, although obviously they did it against Indiana with Jeremiah Love, but that's a fully healthy Jeremiah Love. I don't know Notre Dame driving 97 yards on that Penn State defense at that juncture. It would have been a good time to give it a shot, especially because Singleton was open. You could find something to get yourself in the end zone there, but I want to point out something. You gave a different snap disparity. I wrote it down. At that point, it was a 24-11 snap disparity, and they had Notre Dame very, very tired defensively.
Yeah, I didn't I'm trying to find exactly here. One stat I shared in instant analysis I want to share here again right now. In Penn State's second possession of the game, when Notre Dame forced a punt from the 20-yard line, that was precisely at 8:05 p.m. Penn State had taken over possession at 8:35 on the game clock in the first quarter. But I tried to chart, because I thought this could be a magical game, So I tried to chart game time and actual time. And so at 8:05 p.m., Penn State punts. They don't punt again, if I'm not mistaken, until like 9:49 p.m. in the second half. So just an unbelievable stretch there. And the stat I had that you're talking about is 2 minutes and 18 seconds before the half, T.O. The Notre Dame defense, when they're down 10 to nothing, right after Penn State has scored that touchdown to cap a 90-yard, 15-play drive, Notre Dame's defense had 38 tackles at that point in time. Penn State's defense had only had 20. That just tells you it was literally almost 2-1 for the first 28 minutes of the opening half.
JB, this is the four-hour anniversary of Penn State's second punt because it was exactly at 1:49 when you made that comment. So I just want to point that out for those joining us, the Hardy joining us here for overtime. Open the second quarter, Anthony Knapp injured about the 13-minute mark. Pretty big deal considering Penn State's pass rush and Tosh Baker has to come in. Tosh Baker in pass protection, that has been probably the reason Anthony Knapp beat him out at the beginning of the year and was able to hold on to the job. They fought through it. But Penn State still seized control after that. It was an all-power drive by Penn State, I called it, overwhelming them 15 plays, 90 yards, 7 minutes, 17 seconds. At that juncture, 10-0, 194 yards to 75. That illustrates the snap differential you're talking about. First time trailing by 10 points all year, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. First time, first double-digit trailing since last year at Clemson, I do believe.
Riley Leonard then hurt there shortly thereafter. Not a concussion, but he gets hit. He smacks his head off the ground, so he, of course, has to go in the tent, come out of the game. Mandatory these days. And Rocco Spindler on the same play goes out for the duration. Charles Jagasa comes in. Heck of a player, as you mentioned. How many days had it been? Hit the date calculator for me.
377 days since Charles Jagasa had actually played offensive line and played it for a significant amount. He got a few snaps last week in the Sugar Bowl on like field goal protection or one of those teams units, but he had not played down after down reps on the offensive line since December 29, 2023. We're in 25. We're more than a week into 2025. 377 days.
And that's when Steve Angeli has to come in. Give Steve Angeli a lot of credit. He suffers two sacks on the drive because, quite honestly, it's difficult when Penn State's has their ears pinned back. They know you can't run because you're trying to drive down for a desperation field goal. Three third down conversions. I have them here. Angeli comes in. You knew he was going to come in throwing. You knew he was going to come in throwing short. And you also wondered what his pass protection and feel for the pocket would be like against such a quality defensive line. He hadn't played against a team like that this season. So that was an automatic challenge for him. But Angeli comes in, hits Faison for 14 yards. It's Evans for 4 yards on 3rd and 3. And, of course, it's Aeneas Williams for 4 yards on 3rd and 1. It sets up Mitch Jeter. That 41-yard field goal, I know Priester and I kind of differed on this. I thought it was absolutely huge that they got that field goal because they're getting the ball. I know they had a bad half, and I know Marcus Freeman had to jump on him a little bit at halftime. But without that field goal, I don't know what happens at halftime.
No, because Notre Dame, to its credit, had to scratch and claw and find a way to get into field goal position right before the half. But then that you could argue there was almost as much pressure on that kick as the end of game kick because of how desperately Notre Dame needed a modicum of momentum. And that's all it was. It was 3 points from 40 plus yards to get a shred of hope going into the locker room. And then I look forward to us talking more to Marcus and the coaches about this in the coming days. This staff's halftime adjustments, and they were as good this game as any we've seen, just really big time with what they were able to do. But that drive, again, you lose Riley Leonard, and that's the same drive. You also lose Rocco Spindler at the exact same time. They both go out. Then you have to bring in Jagasa and Angeli. Yeah, Angeli was sacked twice. I'm very firm in believing that one of those sacks was not on him. It was a high errant snap to the right that had some pretty significant velo on it. And then I think it was Abdul Carter who absolutely might have just made himself the number one draft pick on that one rep against Emil Wagner for what he did on that play. But credit, I guess, we thought it was Billy Shrouth, and then who did they say?
They announced Billy Shrouth. I don't know who recovered that fumble, but Andrew Gilmore says, what about the fumble recovery? I wrote down Shrouth because they announced it. I'll tell you what else I wrote down. When the fumble happened, I wrote fumble loss because I cannot believe Notre Dame recovered that fumble. I was shocked when I didn't see a bunch of Penn State players pointing the other way.
Well, it was one of the O linemen, and again, they did announce Shrouth, but then they changed it. And it might have been Coogan or Jagasa. I'm not sure which. I thought Shrouth recovered it, but you're exactly right, because when you watch the replay, you wonder how on earth Abdul Carter doesn't get the fumble recovery. Like, it looks like it's in his breadbasket. Maybe he couldn't tuck it away because of his shoulder, T.O. I think that's fair to wonder.
That's an interesting point. I want to point out here, at this point, I wrote down that Penn State –
Mario, I agree.
Combined, Penn State was 4-for-7 on third and fourth down, because the two times they didn't get it on third, they got it on fourth. They were 4-for-7 there. They go to the break. They finish 5-for-13 combined. That's 1-for-6 in the second half. It just shows you how much they were really dictating at this point in the contest heading into halftime. And Priester, we just finished up with the, if you can hear us now, we finished up with the second quarter review. I told JB, Penn State was 4-for-7 combined third and fourth down going into the break. They finished 5-for-13. That's when and Bryce mentions halftime adjustments. That's Al Golden. Go ahead, JB.
I was just going to say to further emphasize just how much Penn State laid on Notre Dame in the first half, even if it was only 10 points. Those two scoring drives, guys, by Penn State were a combined 29 plays. They were 14 and 15-yard scoring drives, a 14-play, 55-yard scoring drive that I marked lapsed only like 4:45 of game clock, but took actual 13-plus minutes of real life because it spanned the quarter change and all this stuff. But 29 plays on two first-half scoring drives. We have not seen that against this Notre Dame defense the entire year. We've barely seen it any of the last 3 years with Al Golden and Marcus Freeman helming that stuff.
Well, I mean, I just thought it looked really, really grim at that point. And, you know, like we've kind of been expecting, you know, the breaking point. At what point is Notre Dame, is it going to be too much for Notre Dame? And it looked like that. I mean, it looked like Penn State was sharper and fresher. They had the two extra days, and you know, we know about Notre Dame and the injuries. And so I was in a little bit of a pessimistic mood at halftime. T.O. was a little bit more optimistic because of what Notre Dame did at the end of the half. But still, Notre Dame had not stopped Singleton and Allen, and they were getting chunks. I just didn't anticipate that at that point Notre Dame had enough in the tank. But this is a Marcus Freeman coach team, and they go into halftime and out comes Superman in the second half. They changed everything. They immediately started having offensive success, and they had none, and they're doing it with Baker and Jagasa in the lineup.
Essentially the middle eight, by the way, and Drew Mintock made a great point. We'll have to call it the 8 minutes and 14 seconds in this game, but Notre Dame finds a way to win the middle eight again and has a 10-7 scoring edge over Penn State, essentially in that middle eight, which gives Notre Dame on the season now a 155-17 advantage in the middle eight. Penn State only the third person to score only the third team to score in the middle eight, but unfortunately that's three of Notre Dame's last four opponents that have scored in the middle eight.
You know, turns out those guys are better opponents too, so it might happen again when we're coming up here because they're a little better.
Hey, Penn State finishes the season, if my math is correct, with 202 points in the second quarter alone. Did their field goal come in the first quarter?
It came the first play of the second. Yep.
Okay. Oh, it did. Okay. Right. So 202 points in the fourth quarter. I don't know that I've ever heard of a team scoring 200 points in a quarter. Now, obviously, with a 12-team playoff, the season's extended a little bit, but they're dominant in that quarter. Most teams are. Most offenses have their most success in the second quarter, but they flex their muscles. But man, I mean, all the credit in the world for Marcus Freeman and the way he gets his team to continue to fight, even when you think they're completely out of gas.
Start of the third quarter, Jeremiah Love gives them a huge boost. Runs 8 yards, 9 yards, 8 yards. And I wrote down Aeneas Williams finishes with a burst what Jeremiah Love started. 36-yard reception, 15-yard run. By the way, Notre Dame's longest run of the day. Aeneas Williams goes for 15 yards, but it sets up the touchdown that – will there be a touchdown? I remember Tony Rice in 1989 dragging a USC player 2 yards – holding onto his leg for the final part of a run for a score. Jeremiah Love topped that today. I think, Priester, was it you or was it someone behind us, Tyler James, that exclaimed when Jeremiah Love bounced out of a tackle and didn't get tackled for loss. What a run at the goal line, but he hadn't even scored yet, and then he scored. It was one of the best three-yard runs you will see, and the guy has one knee.
Yeah, well, it was, Tyler. But, you know, we should be accustomed to the spectacular. And it's just like Love has this switch that he flips where it just – it does not matter who's trying to tackle him or, like, you know, at a certain part of that two-yard touchdown run, it was like, okay, great effort, but he can't get in. Mm-hmm. And then he just won't be denied. What amazing character that young man has. God only knows what he was dealing with pain-wise with the knee.
Well, I think very strongly that Notre Dame's offense, particularly Aeneas Williams and Jeremiah Love, ran throughout the second half. Frankly, the way that Penn State's running backs ran on Notre Dame in the first half. They ran with a real purpose and a rugged determination. And to Penn State's tailback's credit, like, they were getting hit, and they were going through those hits. And have we ever seen X Watts get trucked like he did tonight?
Oh, man, he did. I can't recall it.
And then there was another one where Warren trucked another defender on the sideline, and then he stiff-armed Osbury to the turf. But the two tailbacks for Penn State, wow. I thought. And that's one of the things we hit on in pregame instant analysis was, could Notre Dame get any knockback tackles? And in the second half, Notre Dame got some knockback tackles. Sometimes they didn't go as TFLs because the ball was at the half-yard line, so it still got spotted to the original line of scrimmage. But Notre Dame did a better job of meeting at the point of contact in the second half.
Yeah, I you know, again, you talk about omens in that first half. When Watts got plowed, it's like, holy crap. If that happens to him, you know. Yeah. Those two guys are sensational, both over 1,000 yards. We knew they were great. I just felt really strongly that Penn State's offensive line, they've got a 348-pound left guard. They've got a 327-pound right guard. And I thought, Rucci is really, really good in pass pro. And then on the left guard is as well. So it was a handful, but I haven't quite added up what the numbers were in the second half of those running backs. But not like they were in the first.
Yeah, I love the
good point by Coach Hunt for real fast, JB. Jaden Thomas had the longest run because I want to bring it up because it was a third down run for 18 yards. It was not innocuous. That was a very big deal.
No, and the point I wanted to make, the thing I wanted to ask about postgame, was that we saw Marcus Freeman keep his MO yet again. They were aggressive, even with Steve Angeli, for the final 40 seconds, 50 seconds of the opening half when they had to have a spark. And then they came out, and I can't remember if it was a wheel route to Aeneas Williams or if they just checked into something. They slipped him out, and the Penn State defender, I think number 41, got washed up a little bit, and Aeneas just outran him. And one of the best throws of Riley Leonard's entire season at Notre Dame was on that play, but it was a chunk play. And right. Notre Dame kept making aggressive play calls. The Jaden Thomas was an aggressive play call. It was third and short, and you're thinking – they're going to run Riley Leonard here, or are they going to just try and pound it up inside with a tailback or maybe a speed option? And instead, it's Jaden Thomas. And I think it shows you the faith and trust that this coaching staff has in Jaden Thomas, because he's the wide receiver you could give it to right there and feel like if they meet him at the point of impact, he'll give a chance to get the first down. He's tough enough. He's rugged enough. He's thick enough that he could get that first down. God bless you, O'Malley. Regardless,
you got to know how to hit mute. It was good.
That's we don't have that. We need that kill button. Jaden Thomas, big body, 215 pounds. He's listed 215. He plays bigger than that. And obviously that play works in practice, you know, but on Bloody Tuesday, when they're having, there are no more Bloody Tuesdays here left in the season because of the nature of what Notre Dame's gone through and where they're at. But yeah, it's a testament to, and you know, great for Jaden Thomas. I, you know, he's been a pretty good soldier. He was a guy that we talked about being a captain possibility in the preseason. He doesn't get many balls thrown his way, but man, that's a big time huge play.
One thing that Marcus Freeman talked about, and this came right after this set up the Jeremiah Love touchdown, the stop by Christian Gray. I want to point out, I wrote this down. Oben set the edge, and Jalen Snead beat Tyler Warren. He got underneath him to cut off that block for Christian Gray to make the tackle. We don't hear Jalen Snead beating a physical guy like Tyler Warren very often. As part of his MO, he's usually a guy that runs and pressures the passer. And Oben set in the edge. They turned that back for Gray to make the play. That led to Greathouse's leaping catch. And I still contend that catch allowed Greathouse to do everything else he did the rest of the game. Because all of a sudden, you're heavily engaged. You've made a big play. And you have a quarterback that's going to start looking for you.
So we know then if since Greathouse finished with 105 receiving yards, and we've already cited the statistic on how long it had been since Charles Jagatha had played meaningful offensive snaps. That means it had been 377 days since Notre Dame last had a 100-yard receiver, because it came via Jordan Faison in the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, December 29, 2023.
Also one of the greatest games of all time, the Sun Bowl of 2023.
Memorable. The most memorable until now. Let's put it that
exactly.
Way. Exactly. Hey, shout out to – I mean, you want to talk about Warriors, Abdul Carter. I'm watching him in pregame, and he's not using his left arm. There's a couple times he was going through reps, and he wasn't even lifting either arm. And so, you know, he's doing the smart thing. He's preserving the movement. And J-Love does the same thing. He's not busting his butt during pregame. He's saving it for the game. But, big time. I want to read a quick text. I hope I'm not out of line here, but what a game, Tim. So great to see you, albeit briefly, on to Atlanta from Pete Bavakwa. He was on the stage when I had an opportunity to just tap him on the foot and say congratulations. And it's
you
really
kicked off the field yet? You weren't kicked off the field yet at that point by the
the Orange Bowl committee communication, they've got to get it together. We've got a guy in the press box that's saying we can go down on the field, and then we're down on the field. And, guys trying to tell me we have to leave, or telling us we have to leave and usher us off. And I'm looking for you guys so that we can coordinate what we're going to do post game. But, they need to, maybe in the 92nd annual Orange Bowl, they'll have their stuff together a little bit better.
Start of the fourth quarter is where Penn State started to make some headway back on. Al Golden had started to shut them down the third. What a drive. Three fantastic play calls in a row where they get Warren loose on the sideline. I love the timing of the Drew Allard quarterback keeper. That was that was absolutely perfectly designed for 11 yards. And then Priester's backup tight end. Was he the fourth guy to slip across the formation there? That was
absolutely. I want to watch that sequence. That maybe it's the third and fourth quarter of Penn State offense when they got cooking a little bit. Yeah. How much did you guys get reminded of USC in the second half at the last day of November when Al Golden was dialing up the pressure on Jaden Mayava because he was hitting some downfield stuff and Notre Dame needed to find a way to pressure him. And they started dragging some guys underneath and hurting Notre Dame in that regard. And I thought when I saw that tonight, I just thought in a lot of ways it was, a redo of the trip to Troy.
Tim, the 27-yarder to Warren was so beautifully designed. It was just that's when you're saying, okay, the greatness in Penn State's offensive coordinator is coming out. And that was just so beautifully designed. I can't wait to look at it again, even though it went against Notre Dame.
And then, of course, Norm gets the ball back. First, I say the magic words, Notre Dame needs a drive starter. Riley Leonard throws a pick.
Oh.
Boundary defensive end drops. That I wrote down tragic INT by Riley Leonard. He looked, I mean, it was, if it wasn't a misread, if he did see him as a really bad throw, and I know that could be one of either two things, and it cannot happen. It was a momentum changing game seizing almost play by Penn State. And of course it led to a touchdown. Maybe it shouldn't have though, because Jack Kaiser with a nice interception and coverage on a forced underthrow to Warren, a Don Shuler flag for pass interference connecting with Warren. I think it's not looking back mostly. But, JB, you had a thought on that.
Yeah, I just thought that you either don't call anything or Warren initiated. Remember, it's important to remember in the college game, you can face guard. You cannot face guard in the NFL. You can face guard in pass coverage in the college game. Adon Shuler had his hands up. He was running. And I just don't think that it impacted the play. The ball was underthrown. And Tyler Warren didn't try to come back to it. and Aiden Shuler ran through him. That's just not what happened. It was a Big 12 officiating crew. I did want to note, because I read his lips and I wrote it down at that time, so I will give you the edited version, but I loved Marcus Freeman getting into the officials at that point in time, and he said, "That's BS. That's BS, and you know it. That's effing horse stuff." So
that's the same crew. That's the same crew as last week.
I guess it was. Yeah, ACC crew. ACC crew tomorrow night in Texas for the Cotton Bowl. Big 12 crew. You're exactly right. It was. I remember looking at it now. Same crew that had the Sugar Bowl last week. I'm not going to rant a long time about it. And these guys train incredibly hard. I'm friends with some college officials, but the sport owes it to everyone that lays so much on the line to professionalize it and do a better job with it.
I'll have to see it again. I didn't think Shuler made contact with him. I thought Warren just, I don't want to say he flopped, but I think he just kind of.
Yeah, Ray James, right. No, I know. Yeah.
I mean, just kind of fell. I don't want to use the word flop because he's such a great player, but I mean, that's kind of what he did. I didn't think that Shuler made, and Shuler, you know, I realize DBs are confident and, you know, he played it off like nothing happened, but I truly think that Shuler thought that nothing really happened there. And that was really unfortunate because, because I predicted Eller would have two interceptions and only had one.
Well, he had three. Officially.
Yeah, I know.
Three, but only one stood. But he was intercepted three times. That's what I'm going with. Like, he threw three interceptions, one stood.
Yeah, that kid's going to hate himself tonight. That last pick, I mean, that's – and who's pressuring him? I'm not sure who that was.
Jalen Snead.
It was Snead. Okay, yeah. That was huge.
Yeah, it's good to hear somebody.
I just wanted to say, I see somebody asking there in the comments, and I can't believe how many people we have participating. So thanks for all of those. And of course, Regine again is back as every week. But I see somebody in the comments, could it be because Shuler didn't turn his head around? Again, you don't have to turn your head around at the college game. In the college game, you can face guard. If you don't turn your head around, you can't run through the guy. But I just don't think Shuler ran through the guy.
Why was Kaiser's interference against Georgia?
You said it was the same crew, right?
Yeah, it was. Well, and then
there you have it.
Maybe they don't know that rule, JB.
Not a Notre Dame game, but last week or 10 days ago in the playoffs, when Arizona State was rallying to make it interesting against Texas, they called defensive pass interference on a play that Cam Scataboo ended up making the reception anyway and getting a huge gainer. And I thought Scataboo pushed off on that play. If you go back and watch it, I couldn't believe it was DPI. I thought it was going to be offsetting penalties because Scataboo pushed off the defender. He slowed down and pushed off, created separation, and then the defender ripped his helmet off. So I really thought the play was going to be null and void and it would go back because of offsetting penalties. But I just bring that up to say, like, We're not invested in covering that game. We're invested in watching that game last week as college football fanatics and to help us do our job overall better. But we can too easily pinpoint issues in all of these games, and I just think that it can be better.
This turns into the Jaden Greathouse drive. It starts out with Jadarian Price, who had a very rough day, actually. Losing 4 yards on first down. Think about that, guys. Riley Leonard throws the pick that could define the season.
I know.
Penn State goes down and scores on an overturned interception, and you get a 4-yard loss on your next offensive play. But then Riley Leonard finds Jaden Greathouse for 11, gets some of it back, finds Greathouse on that really nice release play where it's 3rd and 3 and they get 6. A few snaps later, my MVP, I voted for Jaden Greathouse for his effort. 54-yard touchdown, cornerback falls down, makes the safety miss, tie game. And I had been saying to you, Tim Priester, because – touchdown was scored at the 4:43 mark, so I must have probably said that's around the 5-minute mark. If they go down and score, because they're just at midfield, you got to go for two. You're too tired to play overtime. But when Notre Dame scored, so nope, kick the point.
Notre Dame scored so quickly after that, 1, 2, 3, six or seven plays.
And both teams still had three timeouts left at that point, plus the 2-minute timeout. So
How did the guy fall down? I really didn't get eyes on that.
The one
covering Greathouse.
Yeah, I know. I think it was number 5 near the line of scrimmage. And I don't know if Jaden just shook him and he fell down or if there was
a shake, but
yeah, I saw him go down.
This is why we rewatch the game, because you cannot, there, it's impossible to see everything from the press box. So I'll be looking forward to seeing that when we get back to South Bend.
And then, of course, there's an exchange of possessions we don't talk about here, because we thought Notre Dame was going to have a chance to win it, getting the ball back. Riley Leonard sacked. He has to scramble for a few yards. And then you're like, well, third and five, what's the call? Sacked again. And you start wondering a little bit that Notre Dame's offensive line might be in a little bit of duress here, a little bit having an issue. And I'm thinking, if this game goes to overtime, who's more likely to gain 25 yards on about six snaps?
Yeah, the way they're, yeah, the way they were running the football in the red zone, yeah, that would have been a concern. You didn't want to do that. I mean, there would have been some satisfaction clawing back in order to do that, yeah. But Drew Eller handed one to Notre Dame.
Yeah, and Penn State had a drive starter. They had a 13-yard run from the 15-yard line. There's still 37 seconds left. It's a tie game. You're trying to get to about the 31, 32 for their kicker. It's not exactly Money Mitch situation, but it's also any kick from 52 yards is a chance when it's the last play of the last play of the game. What a catch by Christian Gray.
Oh, my gosh. And Tim, you said it. I mean, look, he's had trouble holding on to the football. And we're all sitting there watching a replay, and son of a gun if he doesn't get his hands underneath it. But, hey, I want to say this. Man, James Franklin can't win a damn big game. You got to be kidding me, man.
He had I agree with you, and he was insufferable 2 days ago. I thought James Franklin had a fantastic post-game press conference today. I thought he was incredibly
he was gracious.
He was heartfelt about his own players. He said Marcus Freeman is a great coach and a great man, and mentioned that Jared Parker said, I love Jared Parker, and Jared Parker loves Marcus Freeman, basically. No, I thought James Franklin doesn't need to redeem himself. And he did pontificate a lot. He talked about how he's now the veteran coach and all that stuff. But I actually, just because I like to I am fair unless someone's being a moron about being independent. James Franklin did a great job in the postgame press conference today.
I agree. He didn't pontificate as much as Mick Cronin did the other night. Did you see that?
I did see that. My colleague at Football Scoop, Doug Samuels, actually wrote about it. It was so
wild. Oh my gosh! I don't want to get off topic.
I'm not off topic either. I just want to, since we're talking about James Franklin and you brought up his inability to win a big game, I'll give another shameless plug to Zach Barnett over at Football Scoop. He wrote tonight, as soon as the game ended, that Penn State played a 16-game season and didn't move the needle any to change the narrative about Penn State under James Franklin. I think it's a pretty damn good column. I think that's a great point. And he notes here that now James Franklin is 1-15 at Penn State against the AP top five. Yes.
Yeah. In case he's wondering, Marcus Freeman is, as of midnight tonight, is 39 years old.
That was the first question in the press conference. Marcus enjoyed his birthday. Terrence Denson asked, I wonder what Marcus said him in the postgame exchange. Franklin did say he was very classy in the postgame exchange. So I'm not sure, but there was no ill will of any type, because I don't think Franklin would have brought up how classy someone was, if anything was said. Kamian Beavers, great point. Tim Priester said the same thing to me. I thought Jay Love was the MVP. Priester, you mentioned you could, I had a vote and you said, give it to Love. I say, Jane Greathouse had a pretty good day too.
Man, long time
MVP are probably the two things there. Yeah,
long time coming for Greathouse. That was we were asked during the week who's going to step up over the phase out. Well, the only possibilities really are Greathouse, Evans, and Evans stepped up.
Yeah,
Collins. He didn't play
since the first quarter.
Yeah, I he's probably still sick. I don't know. Maybe he had an injury, but. By the way, let's talk about the flu that apparently went through the Notre Dame team. It was incorrect. I mean, it has over the last couple of weeks,
right?
But it suddenly didn't crop up with two dozen players. I was literally told one player, as of today was bothered by the flu, and it was a walk on. I don't know which one, but.
I received similar information. I thought it was one scholarship player. What I'll say, I was told by some folks in the program and with direct connection to the players, was that, there was some norovirus issues earlier in the week, but that those were before they ever flew to South Beach. So I thought that was much ado about nothing, and I think Notre Dame played its guts out, but they didn't leave their guts on the field because of the flu. They just left the guts on the field because it was a gritty, courageous performance. Well,
I put that on a message board really right before kickoff. And with the way the game started, a couple people suggested that maybe there were more people that had the flu than anticipated. But no, question about Bo Collins. Either he was sick or he got banged up. We don't.
Yeah,
he ran off the field. He had a knee brace. He made weird knee braces. I don't know. He had a knee brace, I think, on his left knee. It wasn't on when he ran off the field. It was like down to his shin. I was ushered out of off the field to the Notre Dame tunnel, so I saw everybody come off the field. That's what I said. Anthony Knapp was booted, but they do boot every ankle injury, so that was going to happen. John Bryce mentioned he was in street clothes the second half. That's a bad sign. Rocco Spindler seemed to walk off fine off the field. He's been limping for a month, so he walked off because he got hurt earlier. Jogaso looked like he had been in his first game in 377 days, as JB mentioned. He just looked tired as hell, smiling. And Bo Collins ran off. I mean, he was happy. He was running off with teammates, and they were celebrating while they were chanting MVP to Christian Gray. So while I said great house, some people say love. Christian Gray was the defensive MVP, we should point out, and Riley Leonard was the official Orange Bowl offensive MVP in the game.
Officially, 15 for 23. He did have the two picks, but he did throw for 223. Is that season high? If it's not, it's close. And then Angeli.
54-yard touchdown was a season high for any Notre Dame player.
Yeah.
Wayne Greathouse's touchdown.
Yeah. Leonard, 35 yards rushing. I think he went into today needing like 165 or something. I wrote it in the pregame notes. Needed like 165 to get to 1,000 yards. That's unlikely to happen regardless who they play next week.
Acro Airlines Videos does ask, speaking of braces, what was on Osbury's arm? He has had that. He definitely had it last week. I think he had it for the IU game. So he hurt his arm somewhere along the way. Guys are hurt.
Howard Cross, I thought, had a wrap on his bicep at one point tonight, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's give him credit because he's not healthy. What did he end up with?
Three tackles.
But, I mean, he was out there a lot. I don't know. We don't know the snap count yet, but – I mean, give him a ton of credit for fighting through it. And Rubio, they had Rubio a couple times as a defensive end with the two nose tackle. You know, you got two nose tackles.
I thought they were going to have to go to that for the half. The run was having so much success. I want to give you guys a breakdown here. JB, you mentioned that they started pushing them back in the second half. I kept track of the stuffs, and I don't think I missed one since I stayed upstairs. I had 7 in the first half. I had 11 in the second half, which is a big difference because there were a lot fewer plays for Penn State in the second half, too. Think of it that way. And here they were, and I think the people listening are going to like to hear these names. Gabriel Rubio, Adon Shuler, Drake Bowen, Kingston Villeamuasa, and Hurd. I think KVA was part of that sack when Ron Hurd got the sack.
Yeah.
KVA and Rubio, Rubio, Bowen, Tui Halamaka, and, of course, Jack Kaiser chasing Bryce Young and Drake Bowen cleaning up Aller on a third down stop. Those were the stuffs, run stuffs, and the one sack in the second half. And I can look it up quickly, but half of the offensive plays from the first half.
Well, I love that you brought up the half of the plays element because the last stat that I want to share right here when we've talked about the discrepancy from the first half to the second half. So with 2:18 left in the first half, Notre Dame had snapped 19 offensive plays. Final 32 minutes of the game, Notre Dame snapped 54 offensive plays.
Wow. Hey, here's
once Notre Dame started cooking on offense, Penn State did not have answers.
Here's some complete second half stats. Of course, Notre Dame scored 24 of their 27 in the second half. Penn State had 14. Notre Dame outgained them 261 to 145. Rushing, Notre Dame 29 for 101. Penn State 16 for 63, just 3.9 passing yards. Notre Dame 160, Penn State 82. Third down, Notre Dame 6 of 9 in the second half, Penn State 1 of 4. Total plays 42-26 second half. Time of possession 17-17 to 12-34. They won the second half decisively, statistically, and on the scoreboard.
Someone asked where Bryce Young was. I just want to point out Bryce Young was the guy that made the third down stop along with Drake Bowen. So he's a freshman, man. It's not always going to be easy, and that's a heck of an offensive line he went against today.
Anything he played else? A lot, though. He played a lot, though.
You know, he played plenty. And you know what? They were taking advantage of the edges. That's Penn State also has a good team. As yeah. James Franklin mentioned when he got a couple questions about what went wrong in the second half, he's like, give them some credit, too. Like, Notre Dame, he didn't want to earlier, but he has to now.
Tim, did we talk about the no wide receiver receptions?
We did, but we can reiterate it because no receiver caught a pass against Leonard Moore, Christian Gray, or anybody else Notre Dame football team.
I do want to shout out Zaki Wheatley for Penn State, led all tacklers with 16 in the game. He played
great. Wow, he played tremendous. I didn't realize he had.
He was my defensive MVP of the game because I thought he
had. Oh, my goodness. He was sensational.
JB, I'm going to leave you with one here.
All right.
Notre Dame celebrated its independence 178 days early. It's not here yet, but it's coming soon. They go to the national championship game, 27-24 over Penn State in one of the all-time classic games in Fighting Irish history. Thanks for joining us at Overtime. Get some sleep, JB, or just get on the plane.
No, I take off in 4 hours. Like all the people on here, I probably don't have much sleep ahead of me. But my godson, Spencer, stayed up to watch the whole game. He's in Salt Lake City. He's just 7 years old. So I got to shout out.
There you go. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you in 10 days for the next Irish Illustrated Overtime when the Fighting Irish play for the national championship.